We're on the record. I'm Sheila Cass. Good morning. At least one in seven children in the U.S. has experienced child abuse or neglect in the past year, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That is probably an understatement, the CDC asserts, because cases go unreported. The Family Tree, which is part of Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health, works to end the maltreatment of children. Full disclosure, LifeBridge Health is an underwriter for some WIPR programs. The Family Tree is hosting a town hall a week from Wednesday on April 10th at 6 p.m. as part of Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month. Here to tell us about that and about how the Family Tree works is Matila Jones. She's served in several roles and is currently Interim Director of Programs and Research at the Family Tree. Welcome to On the Record, Matila.
I'm so excited to be here, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me.
What does the Family Tree offer its clients?
Well, the Family Tree offers a wide range of direct service programming aimed at preventing maltreatment. And we do that by addressing a lot of the barriers that parents may have to raising healthy and productive adults. Some of those barriers could include lack of education. So we provide a lot of education around appropriate child rearing practices, as well as identifying child abuse and neglect. But we also offer a lot of information and community resources around some of the barriers that parents may have to providing safe environments for their children. And that could be lack of housing, lack of safe childcare, lack of food resources, et cetera. So if you can think about all the different challenges that may come up as parents are raising their children in community, we try to provide a direct resource for that, all the way from just a resource conversation up into home visiting services where we follow families for years at a time.
I understand there's a concept of primary prevention and secondary prevention. What is the difference?
Yeah, for folks who may be listening who are involved in public health, it may be a familiar term. But primary prevention focuses on trying to reach out to parents, families, and communities before problems occur. So you might think of that in a way of a seatbelt, right? We put on a seatbelt when we get into a car in order to prevent injury from crashes. From this perspective, primary prevention may look like taking a workshop. If you're a first-time parent, you may not be familiar with some of the care needed when you're working with an infant. You might reach out to the Family Tree and take a parenting class as a primary preventative way to make sure that you're prepared so that you're not increasing the risk of maltreatment for your children. For secondary prevention, a challenge may have occurred in a family that may need them to be referred for services. So for example, some of our families who attend our parent education classes have been referred to something called alternative response through CPS. Child Protective Services may indicate that there is a challenge in the home that would open up the child to an increased risk of maltreatment. So they might offer services for parenting classes to that parent. And that parent attends classes, learns new education and skills around effective child rearing. And in that way, we're preventing further issues around child abuse and neglect for that particular family unit.
And I think you may have started, actually, in that answer to answer what I wanted to ask you next. How do you reach your clients?
Oh, my goodness. So many different ways. In Baltimore City, a lot of people know us for our family education services, but we also have a 24-hour helpline. It's almost like a 211 for parents and caregivers across the state of Maryland. And we provide a lot of resources, but also answer a lot of questions around abuse and neglect. We have numerous partners, so we're always reaching out to our different partnering agencies, seeing how we can collaborate, offering resources that may be applicable or useful for their client population. And we also do a lot of advocacy. So the work that we do here in our conversation with you, Sheila, but also our work in Annapolis around the child abuse laws that currently came out around child sexual abuse and victims being able to appeal for redress even after the statute of limitations have been lifted. So those are some ways that we reach out to community to let them know that we're here and we're here to serve.
So you work primarily with adults, not children?
Well, we work with parents and children, but we do a two-generational approach. So for youth, we have programs like our temporary child care center at Kids Care Plus, where we provide temporary 4 hours worth of free child care every day with our licensed child care staff. And that serves youth 2 years old to 12. But we also provide education services and support for parents and caregivers. And caregivers could be grandmas, aunties, or other kind of kinship care situations. So in that sense, we're two and sometimes three generation serving agency.
How many people do you serve?
So last year we served about 27,000 families, and our target for this current fiscal year is about 30,000 individuals.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Matila Jones, Interim Director of Programs and Research at The Family Tree, the nonprofit, which is part of the Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health, works with families to prevent child abuse. April is Child Abuse Prevention Awareness Month. What are signs of child maltreatment you look for or educate others to look for?
So outside of the traditional signs of bumps and bruises, we look for a lot of social and emotional cues. So sometimes that can be a reluctance to engage in social activity, whereas before that child was engaging. It could be changes in behavior, such as appetite, bedwetting, and some other changes in the way they're interacting with peers, especially around sexual abuse. It could be behaviors that come up that could be inappropriate in social situations, especially in situations with peers. There's lots of signs, but usually we counsel folks who are working with families and children, especially, to really observe what was happening before and after any allegations or suspicions of abuse occur. And changes in behavior when looking at totality can definitely be a sign that you should be talking to your children about some of your possible suspicions.
What is misunderstood about what constitutes abuse or neglect?
Wow. I think a couple of different things. One, there's some challenges in living in community that are oftentimes referred to institutions like Child Protective Services that can open children up to an increased risk of abuse, but could be addressed in more supportive ways. And I think that CPS does that through the alternative response system. So I'm thinking of poverty. Poverty can definitely open children up to an increased risk of maltreatment. However, poverty itself should not be considered child abuse. And we would do better as a community to offer alternative resources and support to connect parents to the things that they need so that they can keep their children with them. I think another misconception around abuse and neglect is that children are only at a risk if we see the most egregious cases. So oftentimes the media will show us really horrific cases of abuse and neglect. And oftentimes those situations are end result of years of challenge within that family unit that could have really needed intervention and support. And that's why the family tree really pushes prevention, really reaching out to families before these egregious issues occur. And then I think three, that child abuse can happen anywhere and everywhere. And I think that for folks who may not have children, I think it's interesting to think about the ways in which children influence the future generations and how we all, irrespective of whether or not we work or live with children, have a stake in what happens to the future of our generations.
Give me an example of someone you've worked with and how you intervened and educated about parenting.
Well, we do that every day through our parent education classes. Sometimes our parents come to us and they're not familiar with laws and regulations around abuse and neglect in Maryland. You would be surprised how many people, for example, may not be aware that it is unlawful to lock your children in the car while you go run out and get gas at the store. You may be surprised to learn that a lot of folks may struggle with childcare issues. Part of the reason why we have our temporary child care program at Kids Care Plus was because a lot of parents were coming to us, leaving their children in not ideal or unsafe child care situations while they worked. And it caused a CPS referral. So
let me interrupt on that point. I mean, I'm trying to picture, because I'm not a parent, whether in most cases they kind of know the child is not in a great situation, or in most cases, do they think it's fine?
I think most parents love and care for their children and want the best support situations, but I think a lot of parents are challenged by lack of resource. I think you see it now in a lot of childcare deserts that we have in Baltimore City, the lack of affordability and high quality care. So I think for single parents that have to work to keep a roof over their children's head, make decisions regarding the needs of their children every day. And I think, especially when you come from a background that's already been challenged, where you've grown up with caregivers that may have not necessarily engaged in the most unsafe situations all the time, you may find yourself where you have to pick between the lesser of two evils. And we at the Family Tree never want parents to feel that way. And if we can provide that resource and step into the gap, we know that it protects children in the long term.
Let's get back to the town hall on April 10th. What will happen there?
So it's just really going to be an exciting conversation. We have panelists being featured from the Maryland State Department of Education, from law enforcement communities in Harford County, from folks with lived experience, and clinicians. And they're going to be talking a little bit about the work that they do around decreasing child abuse and neglect in Maryland. But we really want to engage community members themselves in a visioning session to strategize a comprehensive framework for how we can decrease child abuse and neglect in our communities here. So it's really going to be an invigorating conversation. We hope that community members come out and share their expertise. It doesn't matter where you are from all walks of life, you definitely have something to contribute. So we're hoping that people will let us pick their brain around preventing child abuse.
Thanks for talking to us, Matila.
Thanks so much, Sheila, for having me.
Matila Jones is Interim Director of Programs and Research at the Family Tree, which is part of Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health. As she said, the Family Tree will host a town hall a week from Wednesday on April 10th at 6 p.m. The panel discussion and breakout sessions will include educators, legislators, policymakers, and spiritual perspectives. Seats are limited, so registration is required. We've got more information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. Short break on the record. When we're back, how Center for Hope helps families move forward after experiencing trauma. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We've been talking today about prevention of child abuse. Earlier, we heard from a director at the Family Tree, which is part of Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health. The nonprofit works with families to prevent child maltreatment. Another aspect of Center for Hope is its work addressing children and families who have experienced trauma. Joining me now to tell us about that work is licensed clinical social worker and registered play therapist, Yuvi Radigan. She directs clinical services at Center for Hope. Welcome to On the Record, Yuvi.
Thank you so much for having me.
What are the programs at Center for Hope that focus on treating trauma?
Right now, Center for Hope is focused on advancing the mental and emotional well-being for those impacted by trauma. And that includes mental and behavioral health services through my department. My department manages mostly the therapy. And we also have a wonderful interpersonal violence program that operates out of Northwest Hospital. It's first of its kind and award-winning. And we focus on helping individuals survive and thrive after emotional abuse and other types of abuse in relationships. And so I direct mostly the behavioral health services, which provides free therapy and support groups to any individual impacted by trauma in Baltimore City for the mental health services and in Baltimore County for the interpersonal violence program known as DOVE. And we do that free of charge.
So, tell me what constitutes trauma in this context?
A traumatic event is a big event that is shocking, is scary, or dangerous, and it basically overwhelms your system, your brain. While this is a process that impacts your brain, it really lives in your body. And a long time ago in the mid-90s, there was a huge study. It was conducted by Kaiser and the CDC. And they taught us through that study that there are some really important events that can happen to children that can adversely affect you throughout your lifespan. And those events were originally abuse, neglect, and maltreatment, and household dysfunction, such as having a parent with mental illness, or a parent that's incarcerated, or experiencing or witnessing interpersonal violence, and things of that nature. And then some very smart people in Philadelphia also added some additional research that expanded the information to teach us that there are some additional adverse childhood experiences among inner city youth. And their implications for intergenerational trauma, such as bullying, community violence, living in foster care, and racism and discrimination. So at the center, we are funded to provide services and care for people that have experienced such overwhelming instances. And we do that in my department to treat the psychological impact of the trauma.
And your work focuses on children. What ages?
Yes, ma'am. Actually, we provide, my department specifically, we provide treatment across the lifespan. So we provide caregivers and survivors therapy, and we can provide treatment. Our therapists are trained to provide treatment to individuals as young as 3. We do that through evidence-based treatment modalities such as play therapy, to be able to be responsive and, ethically appropriate to the younger individuals, although we do use all of our modalities across the lifespan.
And why is 3 the starting point?
It is what is clinically recommended. We know that trauma does begin in utero, and our therapists are trained to assess children at around 2 or 3. We have treated children as young as 2 at the center. We also know that trauma is nonverbal, and children specifically aren't able to verbalize what they are experiencing. And so some of the training that we have at the center that the therapists have gone through recommend that we start treatment at around 3 years old.
And if this is about experienced trauma, do you also work with the entire family?
Yes, so we prioritize what we would call the direct survivor. And we know that trauma does not only impact the person that experienced the terrible event. So if there is a need, if we notice that the family or the immediate caregivers are in need of treatment, we do extend our services to them as well.
That's UV Radigan, Director of Clinical Services at Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health. On the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the trauma-informed care the center offers. How many people do you serve in a year or a month?
Year to date, we have about 162 clients. We're a small but mighty team. I will also add that we do have bilingual therapists. We have play therapists and art therapists on our team. We also offer support groups. And last year, we conducted about 3,900 counseling sessions.
What are some signs of trauma exposure in children?
So yes, so we are taught that children convey their experiences through behaviors. Oftentimes, children that have gone through an overwhelming experience known as a traumatic event, they will convey what they are feeling through behaviors. Sometimes they are very obvious behaviors, like you have a very shy child all of a sudden that is taking risks and a little it's not following rules the way they used to. Their appetite is affected, their sleep is affected. Sometimes there are very obvious signs like flashbacks and nightmares. Some of the younger children, they demonstrate what we would label as regressive behaviors. So you have a child that is potty trained and is no longer able to make it to the restroom. And those are some of the more obvious signs. There are some less obvious signs that take time to understand, and it really engages the parent, or it's recommended that the parent is available and observant to the child and is able to notice the differences. And every child is unique. Sometimes you will have two children experience the same incident and they respond very differently. And so sometimes we've learned that some children, they are not experiencing symptoms right away. And it does take sometimes time for those symptoms to manifest. So oftentimes our advice for caregivers is to establish some safe space where the child can come and ask questions or be themselves, and for the parent to notice what they notice, whether it's a behavior that is new or different or disproportionate, whether the child is having a flashback, whether the child is avoiding certain things. Avoidance is a huge sign. For example, a child that doesn't want to go to school because of bullying or because there was, a non-fatal shooting, things of that nature. So we really rely on the caregivers to notice what's happening for the child.
A
Many
child
people.
avoiding something that in the past they had not avoided.
Right. So, and sometimes it is related directly to the overwhelming incident or the traumatic event.
When we started our conversation, you said that the programs at Center for Hope are first of its kind. What is the innovation?
We have such a wonderful team at the Center for Hope, and we are what is known as client-centered, meaning we are connected to the community. We are observing and consulting with the community. And so oftentimes we are assessing and consulting with the community to be able to provide what they think is important to them and helpful to them. It's one of the pillars of trauma responsive and trauma informed care. It's their choice. It's centered around their needs, and they are an integral part of our work. And I think that really speaks to our success.
Yuvi, thanks for telling us about this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yuvi Radigan directs clinical services at Center for Hope at LifeBridge Health. We have more information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.